BBC Audio presents Doctor Who and the Keys of Marinus by Philip Hinchcliffe. Read by Jamie Glover. Chapter 1. The Sea of Death. The day, like every day on Marinus, started clear and bright. The walls of the great city shimmered in the early morning heat, and a mile away, the dazzling green sea washed gently against the silver shore. Between the two lay a terrain of twisted, gleaming rock, as if molten glass had spilled from the ground and solidified before reaching the sea. This desolate, burnished landscape was devoid of life. Only the sun, throwing creeping shadows into the numerous rock pools, lent movement to the scene. At 7:01 zeniths, intergalactic time precisely, three BXV sub-oceanic assault craft penetrated Meridian territorial waters at a depth of 50 sonars. Fitted with anti-met radar devices, they sped undetected to within 100 yards of the shore before surfacing and slithering onto the wide beach. For several minutes, the BXVs lay there, glistening in the sun like giant slugs. Then one of the outer casings was pushed open, and a shiny black hand emerged, its webbed fingers clawing the air for support. The Vord invasion of Marinus had begun. Barbara Wright, a pretty, dark-haired English teacher from Coal Hill School, North London, clenched her fists bravely and held her breath. A whining noise pierced her ears and her stomach floated to the ceiling. She reflected miserably on her inability to cope with space-time travel. Human bodies were not built for it, she told herself. At least not hers. She glanced across the control room at Ian Chesterton, her fellow teacher from Coal Hill. He appeared to be enjoying himself, staring wide-eyed at the jumble of flashing lights which charted their spaceship's descent. They were inside a large hexagonal-shaped control room with white hexagonal-patterned walls. A hexagonal console in the middle of the room supported a transparent cylindrical column which moved slowly up and down when the ship was in flight. Next to Ian, deep in concentration, was the owner of the spacecraft. He was an old man with an upright, alert stance and a dignified expression. He had flowing white hair and mischievous blue eyes. He was dressed like an eccentric Victorian professor. Dark frock coat, winged collar and tie, checked waistcoat and trousers. He carried a wooden walking stick, which he shook vigorously in the air when arguing, which was often. He was known as the Doctor. There was one other person in the spaceship, a young girl of about 15. This was Susan, the doctor's granddaughter. She was a petite, chirpy girl with short black hair, cut like a boy's, wide saucer eyes and an infectious grin. A pupil at Coal Hill School, she had always been extremely clever and different from the other girls. Intrigued, Barbara and Ian had investigated her home life and discovered she was living with her grandfather in a London police box. The police box, however, was far from ordinary. For a start, it was larger inside than out, a phenomenon accounted for by the laws of time and relative dimensions in space, as Barbara and Ian subsequently learned. The interior of the police box resembled a spaceship, capable of traveling through space and time. It could, moreover, change its appearance like a chameleon to suit any environment. This incredible craft was known as the TARDIS. The Doctor was perfectly at home in it, and treated each nerve-wracking journey like a fivepenny bus ride. He rarely landed up where he intended, but this only added to his enjoyment. The Doctor did not suffer fools gladly, and his insatiable appetite for solving scientific problems always took precedence over more mundane matters. In this respect, Barbara felt he was not quite human. Moreover, Susan rarely spoke of the Doctor's origins, or of how he came to possess...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?